Hello, and welcome to the World Peace Diet Circle, Module 8. I'm your course facilitator, Steve Prusak. It's great to be with you. If you go ahead and log into your membership site, you've got your December resources all set, ready for download. So check that out in the World Peace Diet Facilitator Circle membership site. Our special guest on today's call will be Howard Lyman, joining Dr. Will Tuttle. So let's get right to it. We've got a great night ahead. Let's welcome to the call author of The World Peace Diet and course facilitator, Dr. Will Tuttle.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's great. It's great to know that we're all together on this December conference call, the third Thursday of the month. Every month we have a call. All of us who are working to spread the message of compassion and health in the World Peace Diet. And we're really fortunate tonight to have one of the great leaders of the vegan movement in our time, Howard Lyman, with us on the call. And I'll be introducing Howard in just about 2 minutes. But I just want to, first of all, just welcome everyone. I hope you're doing all well. I know this is in many ways for those of us who are on the path of veganism and spreading the message of kindness and compassion for animals. This is probably one of the hardest times of the year with Thanksgiving and Christmas, one right after the other. So it's great to be able to come together like this and be part of the message of kindness and compassion for animals. And so let's just take a moment as we begin and just turn our attention within and just feel our connection with this beautiful earth, this beautiful planet, and with all the other human beings who are working to help make a better world, who are devoted to practicing the skills of nonviolence and raising their consciousness and their awareness to be a force for healing and for peace. We know that we're part of a much larger movement for social justice and for equality and for compassion and health and for world peace. And we give thanks knowing that this movement is growing every day, that the work that we're doing is getting stronger, and that the rewards of this really, I think, go beyond anything we can imagine, because not only are we helping ourselves and our loved ones, but we're helping those who have really no voice without us, what we call the animals, these beings on this planet who are being really harmed by humans unnecessarily, by the billions for food and other products, are relying on us, as well as all the hungry people and the ecosystems and so many others. So we're all connected in a much larger interconnected web of life, and it's all about understanding this and working to help make a better world. So just thank you all for joining us, for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. And I'd like to go ahead now and invite us to connect with our special guest, who is Howard Lyman. And, Howard and I go back quite a few years, the animal rights conferences and other conferences. And so we've had a chance to spend quite a bit of time with Howard over the years and with his wonderful wife, Willow Jean. And it's just a real honor that he's with us. I can't say enough about Howard, actually. but basically, he's most probably well known as the cattle rancher who won't eat meat. And he's the author of a really extremely well-known book called Mad Cowboy, as well as another book, which is also an excellent book, called No More Bull. He's a fourth-generation family farmer and cattle rancher, feedlot operator. And after 20 years of operating the feedlot, I'll let Howard tell the story. He does such a great job of it. But he basically sold the ranch and moved into trying to help farmers financially and to move toward organics and to get away from all the chemicals and pesticides and everything. And he ran for Congress back in 1982. He was a lobbyist after that. And he's very well known, in my mind, for this great saying, which is that he learned after several years of working as a lobbyist on Capitol Hill, he learned about the golden rule, which is that those who have the gold make the rules. So he then, in a beautiful way, just took it to the grassroots, to the people, and just traveled, has been traveling over 100,000 miles every year for many years, spreading the message as a speaker and lecturer, and being interviewed on so many different programs, radio and television, speaking and a wide variety of venues and churches and lots of other groups. He was the former director of the Beyond Beef campaign with Jeremy Rifkin and the Humane Society of the United States Eating with Conscience campaign, past president of the International Vegetarian Union, as well as Earth Save International, president now of Voice for a Viable Future, and lives now up in Washington. And he's also the creator of a fantastic video based on Mad Cowboy as well. So I guess there's so much more I'd like to say, actually, about Howard and all that he's done for the movement, because, you know, he's a voice that comes right from within the industry and who understands, really, I think, the system probably better than almost anyone who's alive, from both perspectives of what happens to animals and also how we can live compassionate, healthy, vegan lives. So I'd like to welcome Howard Lyman to the call. Howard, are you with us?
You better believe it.
Whew,
I'm so sitting glad here hearing all of those. I have been this and I have been. I'm almost
I have
a
been.
Has been. Yeah. It's good to be with you, Will.
Yeah, we're really delighted. And I'm personally happy because Madeline is also here with me on the call. And we're actually in Florida right now. And my mother just moved here to Florida. And so she's also a fan of yours. And she's listening as well. So we've got the family here as well as everybody else. And we're sending our love and really our appreciation for all you've been doing over the years. It's great to have you with us. And, you know, we have basically, as I mentioned, I think, to you on that we have on the call with us, people who are really working to try to spread the vegan message, to try to live it more deeply. And we have World Peace Diet study groups springing up here and there. And so people are working to bring the message. And we thought it would be great to get your perspective on the state of the movement create more freedom and compassion for animals, and your thoughts on what the best thing we can do now would be. But first, I guess, would you like to just say a little bit, because a lot of people maybe aren't really familiar with your work. So, if you could say a little bit about what you've been doing primarily over the last few years, it'd be great.
Well, I spent 5 years working on Capitol Hill as a lobbyist, and I hope everybody that's on the call tonight realizes that what's happening on Capitol Hill is nothing more than the biggest charade in the world. The idea there, and it isn't about one party or the other party. The group that's back there is so beholden to their financial backers that allow them to have the best job that they've ever had, that when we expect them to solve problems, that's not going to happen. Their job back there is just to grease the skids for the people that put the money into their campaigns so that they can live better from the investment they've made in the members of Congress. And saying that, I think we need to realize that this is the most important period of human history that have ever existed. The first thing to realize is that the only thing that causes change to Homo sapiens is crisis. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that we have crisis today of a magnitude that we have never seen before in human history. We've done a lot of things that have caused human suffering, but what we're doing right now is we're well on our way to destroying the planet for humans to live on it. Remember that the Earth will survive. The question is, will our children and grandchildren be able to live on the polluted planet that is out there? And I can remember back when I was working on Capitol Hill, and Al Gore was the environmental champion, and he was out there talking about, you know, replacing light bulbs and taking shorter showers and all kinds of things. But he never did focus on the largest cause of global greenhouse gases, which was confinement livestock. And it was just unbelievable to me that something that even the World Health Organization came out and said it was out without a doubt the largest contributor to global greenhouse gases of anything on the planet, more than all of the cars and trucks and buses and power plants, and you name it. But
right.
Al Gore never stood up and informed the American people of that. And I just happened to be reading a magazine today, and believe it or not, Al Gore, after all of these years, stood up and said, you know, confinement livestock is the largest contributor to global greenhouse gases. So there is some hope out there that the light is coming on. But what we need
right.
to do is not sit around and wait for somebody to do something for us. It's about each and every one of us doing everything that we can. It is not about my job is to save the world. My job is to do the best that I can do, to be the best role model for those people that are around me, that, you know, it isn't about what you say that changes people. What changes people
yeah.
is what they see what you're doing. And so it's living what you believe every day. Be prepared when somebody comes up and taps you on the shoulder and says, why in the world are you doing what you're doing? You have a very short window right there to get their attention, because they asked the question. And so their ears are open. They're ready to take in what you have. If you go to them and say, let me tell you what you ought to do, I'm telling you what, you can hear their ears slam shut. They have no intention of listening to what you have to say. But when they ask, the roles are totally reversed. And so when we stop and we think about it tonight, and we're at the holiday season and everybody's talking about good cheer and goodwill and all of the things, look at it and say, what part of the solution am I a full-time participant in? You know, am I recycling? Am I eating a plant-based diet? Am I cutting down global greenhouse gases in the way that I live and the products that I eat? Do I have compassion for other beings? Do I care about all species having the opportunity to live to their full potential, that they can have their own families? You know, I was in production agriculture for 40 years, and I will guarantee you that when I came out of Montana State University with a degree in agriculture, the last thing in my mind was ever being a vegetarian. My idea was coming out, and I wanted to be an agribusinessman. I wanted to be the Donald Trump of agriculture. And so it was all about getting bigger and getting better and larger and doing those things that you could put more animals in smaller spaces, and that you could refine their diet where you've got the greatest amount of growth for the least amount of input.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after I did that for a number of years, I got to looking in the eyes of the animals, and it was... was something that changes your soul when you actually look at them and see what it is that they're thinking about. And so I don't want anybody out there today to look at it and say, well, this is all about being perfect. This is about being pure. We were all sinners in this at one time or another. And so it's right. about doing better tomorrow than what we did today. And I will tell you right now, Will, the thing that gives me the greatest hope is when I can say that no animal has to die for me to live. I can say that with complete honesty. I can live the healthiest life in the world. I can do the best for the environment. I can do those things that make my soul sing, and no animal has to die. And when I look in the eyes of the animals and I can say to them, you know, this is what makes me feel good. This is what makes my soul sing. And I just look at it and say, I'm going to take every day. I'm going to do the best that I can do. I'm not going to be perfect. But I will tell you that since 1990, I have never knowingly eaten an animal product. I probably have, did not know about it. But I attempted every day of every meal for all of those years to basically be 100% vegan. And I believe it's the thing that has saved my life. When I went to my 50th class reunion in Great Falls, Montana, which is not the hotbed of vegetarianism, and I went there and one-third of my high school class has already died. You never saw so many people with canes, crutches, and walkers in all of your life. And of my classmates, nobody wanted to come up and talk to me about my vegan diet until I went to the bathroom. And then they came up to me and said, you ever sneak out and go to the Burger King? You know, they had a hard time understanding that somebody that came from an agricultural background, somebody that was raised in Montana, which is a overwhelmingly agricultural predominant state, that I could actually go and make a change, and I could do that over a period of years. And you know something, Will? I walked into my 50th class reunion. I weighed exactly what I weighed when I graduated 50 years ago. There was not very many people in my class that could say that. But, you know, I ended up with a good deal of notoriety for appearing on the Oprah show and basically talking about mad cow disease and the problems associated with it for human health, and got sued for $180 million. And I can remember my wife looking me in the eye and saying that they're suing us for $180 million. We don't have that. And I said, no, all they want is everything we have. But sometime in your life, you have to stand up for what you believe. If you won't stand up for what you believe, you'll end up falling for anything. And so I went there, and it was what you might call a little stressful. We spent 6 weeks in the courtroom in Amarillo, Texas. You know, Amarillo, Texas is not the end of the world, but it's clearly visible from there. So,
we've been there.
But
totally a gigantic slaughterhouse.
Yeah, to actually prevail with a jury that was overwhelmingly slanted into the support of the cattlemen who were suing us, to actually win there, to be able to look in the eyes of the people and know that millions of people had a whole new idea of the way to eat, the way to change the environment by the irresponsible idea of a group of cattlemen to turn around and sue us. You know, I have a doctor of laws degree, and the first thing that I ever learned was the first rule of law is never sue anyone who has nothing. That was me. Why in the world would you sue somebody for $180 million that didn't have anything and allowed them the platform to inform millions of people, which we could have never afforded to do before? The world, the universe moves in very mysterious ways. But I will tell you right now, I truly believe that, you know, here I am right now, 73 years old. I believe I'm middle-aged. I believe before I die on this planet, the majority of the United States citizens will be plant eaters. And so I think we've come a long way. I think people
You think they'll be vegan?
No, I believe they'll be vegetarian.
Vegetarian? Yeah. It has to happen.
I truly believe that half... You know, they just did a survey, a poll that was out there, and it was the most mind-boggling thing that I've ever seen. This poll was statistically correct, and they went out and they found that on any given day in the United States of America, one-third of the American people were eating a vegetarian diet. On any given day, a third of the people in the U.S. are eating a plant-based diet. Now, we don't have to go very far to change that from a third to 50%, and that's going to happen in my lifetime. And so I think we're going the right direction. The concern that I have, Will, are we going fast enough so there's a future for our children and grandchildren? It will only happen if people like you and the people that are on this call tonight look at it and say, I don't have to do everything. I just have to do everything that I can do. And if we do that, and if you can look in the eyes of your children and grandchildren, and you can say to them, I may not have changed the world, but I did everything I could, then you've lived a life that is a credit to the human race.
Well, those are powerful words. Thanks so much. I don't know if you have time to be on just a few more minutes. I just want to tell everybody, all of you who are listening, if you'd like to ask a question, you know, go ahead and press star 2 on your phone. That way we can see that you've raised your hand. Or you can type it in. If you're at a computer and you know where where the membership page is, you can type in questions there. I'll check that. Yeah, I just, you know, want to encourage everyone. This is a rare opportunity. You have Howard Lyman right here. And if you'd like to either, you know, ask him a question or just anything to say, feel free to press star 2 or type it in. And I just have a sort of a follow-up question when you mentioned briefly. Oh, I see we got a question here. Well, okay, I'll go ahead and go for this question. This is a question from Nina. She says, Howard, what are your thoughts about the recent discovery of a new pathogen and a possible link between Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, that's in other words genetically engineered corn and soybeans, and severe reproductive problems in livestock, as well as widespread crop failure? Wait a second, let me see the rest of it. Is this more widespread than we are being told? Are you
clear
with the question, what you're talking about? Yeah.
Absolutely. I believe right now with the genetically modified organisms that are in our environment, and the fact of it is if you go into any supermarket in the United States of America, and the majority of the products for sale in that supermarket will contain GMOs.
Right.
It is the largest experiment that has ever been conducted on the Homo sapiens species in the world. Nobody knows the ramifications that are there. But as far as I'm concerned, when there were some some things that happened that I think we ought to take heed of. Number one is if you took 10 cows and you had 10 feed boxes, and half of the feed boxes you would put genetically engineered corn, and then the other half of the feed boxes you would put normally grown corn, and turn those 10 animals in there hungry. The amazing thing was those 10 animals would all go to the five boxes of the corn that was conventionally grown and would turn down the genetically engineered corn, only eating that is if there was not enough for them to eat. Or if you look at what happened in Scotland, where they took rats and they fed them genetically engineered potatoes and they all died. They've been feeding potatoes to rats for almost forever, and the rats didn't die from it. But when they went to genetically engineered potatoes, they did. When a world-class researcher reported that information and Monsanto found out about it, they put so much heat on the government that they fired this world-class researcher and tried to squash his investigation on this. This isn't about having science and going out and following the truth. This is all about the greed that is out there, trying to get as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and do not worry about what you're doing to the environment or human health or animal health. And so I think that the group that are on this call tonight need to look at the fact that you need to do what you can do in your group so that people understand what is happening with GMO, that they understand that there's ramifications to this, that we ended up with monarch butterflies that were eating pollen off of corn for almost ever, and when we came up with genetically engineered corn, the monarch butterflies were eating the pollen off of GMO corn, and they died. Do you think that there's not something there that should be telling us this is the death of the canary in the coal mine? Let's wake up to what's going on. We need to get away from that stuff as quickly as possible, and the best way to do it is to make sure that when you're buying food that is certified organic, because that's the only label you know that it is GMO-free. So,
right. Yes,
for the questioner that is there, have I heard about it? Yes. Do I believe that there's facts behind it? Yes. We need to make some changes as quickly as possible.
Right. So it is widespread. She was wondering if it's widespread, and it, obviously it is widespread. Oh. And if these animals are eating genetically engineered products and their health is compromised, then people who eat that, I mean, people who are eating meat and dairy products and eggs, it's probably much worse for them, as well as eating the genetically engineered corn and soy that are in ice cream and, I mean, well, are in, you know, all kinds of stuff in everything, in all the food. So you can't get away from it eating meat and dairy. You're getting it because the animals are eating huge amounts of it, too.
Yeah, well, what,
yeah,
what's,
and there's
bad,
what's
bad about it, Will, is that it the higher on the food chain you go, the more concentrated it is. And so when you're eating an animal product, that is the highest concentration that you can have of it, which is the worst thing that you can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Great. And let's see, there's a question from Tara. She says, Howard, thank you for being who you are. What is your organization doing at this time? That's your question.
Well, I'm... started an organization that I call Voice for a Viable Future. And what it's about a website, we attempt to educate people with information so that it is a place to go that you can access the latest studies that are out there. We publish a short synopsis along with the link to the entire studies so that people can quickly go and take a look at these studies that we're doing. I believe that my task right now is to give people the best information possible so that they can share it with their community. And so that's what I do with Voice for a Viable Future. We publish newsletters, and on the website we have information that allows people to collect the latest data in a convenient manner.
Is that would that be voiceforviablefuture.org
yeah.
or something like that?
It's madcowboy.com.
Okay, madcowboy.com. Great. But yeah, that's a great resource, madcowboy.com. Okay, we have, this is fantastic. We have a question from Pamela. I'll go ahead and ask your question, Pamela. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, hey, everybody. Hi, Howard. I met you briefly at Peaceful Kingdom showing out here in Seattle a year and a half ago.
Yeah, you were wearing a green blouse. I remember that well.
I did show you my book that was recently published. I told you I was from Minnesota, and you said, yes, you can smell it in the air when you get off the airplane in Minnesota.
Boy, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I have a question for you. I wondered if you had any suggestions, because my parents still farm back there, and, you know, they would like to get out of all of it, but when you're heavily invested in all the equipment for the monoculture, and the thought of going organic, as much as they're interested in it, it's just so overwhelming with the investment they have in all the machinery. What suggestions do you have for them?
Well, the first thing that I would suggest for them is to get involved in educating themselves so that they feel comfortable about making a change. The next thing I would say is go to the Organic Association. They have lots of young people that are looking for the opportunity to lease land to grow organic crops. And so your parents wouldn't have to do the investment in it. They wouldn't have to do the work. But there are other people that are willing to do that. And so I would definitely go to places like the National Organic Standards, the National Organic Ronnie Cummings Organization, you know, things like that.
Yep.
They can put them in touch with people that would be willing to partner with them, you know, with your folks putting up the land, that they would do the labor and the work and the whole thing. And I think it's a grand opportunity to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Great. Is that it, Pamela?
Yeah, there's so much more, but I know time is limited. But thanks for all you're doing. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And it's the Organic Consumers Association that Ronnie Cummings heads up. It's in Minnesota, Little Mariah. Great guy, great organization. They need to go and get to know him.
Right, right, yeah. OCA, Organic Consumers Association. That's right. And I have a quick question, or I don't know if it's a quick one, but I'd just love to hear if you can say something. I know it's a little bit controversial, but do you think that with the state of the movement right now, that the best thing for us to do is to focus on spreading the message on veganism, or to focus on trying to make things better for the animals who are in the system? Or what do you think the main focus should be for people who want to spread the message, or who want to make a better world for animals and everyone?
I think that the thing that will allow us to reach the largest number of people to make a change is to focus on the environment. The largest detrimental effect in the environment comes from confinement livestock. So it's a natural progression. You know, when you go to somebody and say, I believe in clean air and healthy soil and clean water, people around you say, oh boy, you're crazy to believe in something like that. You know, about 75% of the American population, if you ask them, they consider themselves to be an environmentalist. So you have them on your side in the first place. Start with the environment and look at it. What can you do to do the greatest good for the environment? That's by adopting a vegan diet. You know, what's an offshoot of that? The healthiest thing in the world, you know, Dr. T. Colin Campbell's book, The China Study, irrefutable proof that the healthiest diet in the world is that that is free of animal products. When you're free of animal products, you're doing the most for the environment. You're doing the most for your own health. You know, it's a no-brainer when you actually stop and look at it. For me, it starts with the environment and the pursuit of as close as possible to 100% vegan diet.
Right. And what about the treatment of animals, because I think also most people think that they really don't want animals to suffer.
But you know, Will, there's such a disconnect of people that love dogs and cats and eat cows. And when you're trying to enlist these people in the movement of doing what we want, it's a lot easier to get their attention through the environment than it is to get them to realize that they are abusing animals, even though that's exactly what they're doing. And so I think, you know, if I could get people to go to slaughterhouses, if I could get them to go to feedlots, but what do? We end up with the big charade that's out there. You know, we take dead flesh and we give them, you know, these fancy names like a porterhouse. You know, it's not about, you know, a dead muscle of an animal. Take whatever you can do to lead people down the proper path. The proper path, as far as I'm concerned, is individually adopting a vegan diet for yourself. That's the key to where we want to go. And a good way of starting down that path is the environment. And if you can get them to go and look animals in the eye, I'll tell you, you get them to go on that path forever.
Wow. Well, it's been great having you with us. I know we could go on and on here, but it's already been a good almost 40 minutes, and I don't want to take too much more of your time. Maybe I'll just ask one final, maybe just briefly. You know, because at the beginning you said that nothing seems to really change Homo sapiens except a crisis. And you said that in kind of this sly way, I think, that, you know, none of us wants a crisis. We want to have comfortable lives. We want everything to just go along the way it's always been going and so forth. And what you're implying by saying that, I think, is that it's not going to continue that way in the future. Things are going to – we're facing some major changes. And I think you were implying that these changes are going to force us, perhaps, to really change the way we're living on this earth. Do you have anything you can say about that, like what you think –
Sure.
This crisis actually is going to force us to do, as Americans, especially in terms of.
I think
food.
If you look at it, Will, it's like the 900-pound gorilla sitting at your kitchen table. It's around us right now. Global warming, that was probably the most unfortunate choice of terms that ever could have been used. What we need to talk about is extreme weather change. That's what we're about right now, and whether we're talking about the droughts or floods or whatever, these are directly related to human behavior. That's the first thing that's out there. The next thing we're looking at is, you know, human health. One out of every two Americans today are dying of heart disease. One out of two. If we had that many car wrecks out there in a day, I mean, they would be clamping down and making all kinds of changes, but seeing how people will die slowly and give up all of their resources and finance the medical community. You know, the largest growth industry in the world is the treatment of cancer. So all of these crises that are out there are coming together like the perfect storm. And they are all related. And the most dangerous weapon in the arsenal of the Homo sapiens is our fork. We are causing more problems with our fork than anything else. So let's go out there and start leading the way, not by shouting at people on the street, but by the way that we live our lives. And I guarantee you, if you adopt a good, healthy, vegan lifestyle, people will come up and tap you on the shoulder and say to you, are you one of those V people? And all of a sudden, you've got their attention. We have an opportunity of dealing with this crisis. I believe this is the greatest thing that ever happened to us, is having the crisis that we're going to focus people's attention on it. So for me, it's a great day.
All right. Well, it's been great having you with us. Thanks so much for taking time out of your, I know you have a busy schedule. And please give our love to Willow Jean and keep up the great work you're doing. We'll have to definitely stay in touch and see what you're doing at madcowboy.com. Everybody remember that website. I think it's a great resource.
Well,
and,
my wish to each and every one of you is have a great holiday season. Remember, we need joy in the movement if we're going to have people join us. It is not all doom and gloom. It is, we have the grandest opportunity right now to save the planet and the people that are living on it. Let's be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Happy holiday.
Thanks so much, Howard. Yes.
Okay.
Great. Well, it's great having you with us. It's almost like having Santa Claus with us in the sense of the spirit of generosity and goodwill.
All right. So, give my best to Madeline.
To join us. I sure right. will. All right.
Okay.
Take
bye
care.
Now.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye. All right. So thank you, Howard Lyman. He's a living legend, and we're so honored that he was able to share some of his energy and insights with us here on the World Peace Diet Facilitator Circle. And so I'd like to remind everyone now, of course, that this we'll go on a little bit longer here. If you have any questions to me about anything at all in any of the in the modules, if you're going through the program or if you've already gone through the program in your life about any issues, either personally or in the movement or whatever that you think you'd like to talk about, or if you have any successes that you'd like to share with everybody in the community, anything you're happy about or any concerns you have or any challenges you have, it's a wonderful opportunity, I think, to gather like this on the first Tuesday and the third Thursday and share our insights and challenges and trials and tribulations and successes and so forth together. And so feel free just again to press star 2 or type it in on your screen, anything you'd like to either ask or to say or to proclaim to everyone. And before I go a little bit farther, I think I'll go ahead and see if Steve, we talked about Steve possibly giving us a little bit of news. Steve is, I think it's okay if I say this, it's very public, is on his 19th day today of his raw juice feast, raw juice fast. He's not eating any food. And he's been doing this for 19 days, and it looks like he's still doing well here. Steve, do you want to say anything at all about that? I know you have a blog and anything else.
Well, it's the 20th day.
The 20th day. Oh, sorry. Day number 20. Even better.
Well, when you're blogging, you really are able to track each day and exactly what's going on with it. And, well, for me, I started this juice feast because I needed to realign myself. you know, it's all about the animals and the planet and the environment and our relationships. And for me, I just needed to get back to my core. I was really, well, I guess I just gotten off track with my eating. I mean, here we are in the holiday times. It's not the most ideal time to do this, but I had gained some extra weight. I guess I was visiting Native Foods and Real Food Daily and all these amazing vegan restaurants out here just because Julie and I just get so caught up in our work and just found ourselves preparing our own food less and less and eating out more and more. And I guess those Rubens over at Native Foods caught up with me. And I just
yeah, they're pretty rich.
Oh, gosh. They're so good, but they are a comfort food, you know, and sometimes
right.
we get tied and addicted to these comfort foods and for emotional reasons or whatever it is. And I just got to the point where I just decided to do this juice feast where you're consuming a gallon of juice a day. And, you know, you're doing two green juices, two fruit juices, and some other supplements like flaxseed oil is allowed and things like that. So I was following this protocol from juicefeasting.com. But actually, that program is 92 days, and originally I set out to do that, but I realized we're going away at the end of this month for a little vacation skiing and up in Big Bear Mountain here in California, and there's no vegan restaurants out there, raw food restaurants or anything. There's no organic food out there. There's really nothing. So I wasn't sure how I was going to manage those few days we're there. So I decided I was going to cut it short and just do 21 days, but it's really going to be a little more. I'm going to end Sunday. And this past week, I've incorporated Health Force Nutritionals. They're a sponsor of Raw Vegan Radio now, and they generously sent me out their healing kit. And Jameis Sheridan, Dr. Jameis, is amazing. He's a hardcore vegan, and their company is just – I'm really in alignment with what they're doing and
right,
and
that's right, yeah.
they're putting out there. And the health community is a – You know about them, Will.
Sure, yeah, they're fantastic.
So, I mean, as far as changes for me, I've already dropped 10 pounds, and I just feel so much more energy and clarity of mind. It's just unbelievable. I just can't believe how that processed food really was fogging up my mind, and now I have such a better intuition about my body, the universe, connection, and everything that I'd really wanted out of this cleanse. So I do feel it's time to come off it at the end of this 7-day healing cleanse from Nutritional Health Force Nutritionals, which ends Sunday. So we'll see how we go with that, because in the meantime, I've been putting together this online event that's launching mid-January. It's called Rawpalooza. It's a 2012 a raw food world summit, and I've gathered together some of the greatest minds in raw food, vegan, and conscious living. And we have close to 45 speakers for that, including Dr. Will Tuttle and many others that you guys are going to be familiar with. I haven't announced the official lineup and kind of saving it for it to be a surprise, but I can assure you it's top-notch, you know, world-class leaders, thought leaders, and it's just putting this together is a ton of work, so doing this juice feast has really given me the opportunity to put this together in a way that you know, is really going to be phenomenal. So everyone stay tuned for that. It's going to be a free event, so you'll be able to call in. It's going to be teleseminars, kind of like what we're doing here, but it'll be like 5 to 7 speakers a day and just a ton of great information. So just hope to have everyone involved in that.
Fantastic. Thanks for doing that work. I think it's going to really has the potential anyway, I think, to really raise the consciousness of a lot of people as we hear these ideas in a lot of different ways and encourage people to actually act on them. So good for you. That's great. Is there anything else, or is that pretty much it for right now?
Rawpalooza is the first phase, and then 6 months down the road, it's my intention to do a vegan palooza, and Dr. Will and I will be talking more about that and the role he can play in that. So we're really looking to expand that into the vegan world, what we're doing here for Rawpalooza,
right.
for vegan palooza. Right. So, yep, that's it for me. Happy holidays to everyone. It's just great to be on the call. That was really amazing to hear Howard Lyman again, and just great to be here.
Wow. Thanks so much, Steve. As everyone knows, Steve is the mastermind behind all of the technical details of everything we do with the World Peace Diet Circle and the Mastery Program and the facilitator training and everything. And really a wonderful ally and worker for compassion for animals and for the environment and for health. It's really interesting to hear Howard talk about the importance of focusing on the environmental concerns. And his book, The Mad Cowboy, especially, I think really does a great job of that. If you want to look at that, I have, of course, quite a bit in the World Peace Diet about it. I agree that it's extremely important. The environment is being utterly devastated by animal foods, and the main use of genetically engineered corn and soybeans, cottonseed, and those big three especially are to livestock feed. And I think it's important to remember what he said, that it concentrates these genetically engineered toxins in foods which are really not very well understood and they haven't been researched, and it's really a crime, I think, against humanity that they're being let loose into the world. This is a pollution that, you know, most types of pollution are cleaned up eventually by the earth. When we put chemicals, they eventually get broken down, plastics and other things, but genetic pollution goes into the genetic web of the planet, and this is stuff that is just being hatched out of the brains of, to me, extremely irresponsible corporations that are trying. They're not doing it to feed people. They're not doing it in any way to bless the world. The actual crops that they are creating are performing worse than the products that are naturally available. It's just that they can control them. They can create crops where people are forced to buy pesticides and where they're forced to buy seeds, a Terminator technology. And so it's just a scheme to increase profits. And this pollution of the gene pool is something that I don't, it's frightening on the level that we don't know how we can actually undo this or how nature can ever undo this. And it's the kind of arrogance and hubris that I talk about in the World Peace Diet as leading inevitably to tragedy. And yet, perhaps on the other level, you know, this is what we're looking at in terms of being what is going to help motivate people to begin to actually change their behavior. It was great to see the other day, for example, that Hungary, the country of Hungary, burned the entire crop. There was a genetically engineered crop. I think it was corn, and they burned the entire thing. The government did, because they don't want Monsanto going in there. And I think the more we make us think about this kind of stuff, I think on every level, I mean, not buy it, tell other people about it. For sure, don't eat it. Just do whatever you can to encourage your loved ones not to buy genetically engineered, not only meat, dairy products, and eggs, but if you go to the grocery store, I mean, most things have corn or soy in them, processed food. That's one of the reasons Madeline and I just don't buy processed foods really to speak of anymore. And it's just so nice to use natural ingredients. All right. So, I noticed we have a couple of hands up here. Let's go ahead. I think in Dayton, Ohio, I think this is Persephone, I bet. I'm not sure. But, yeah, you're on the air. I mean, you're with
Hi,
us.
Hi. Thanks, Will. You're right. This is Persephone.
Okay, great. Good to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here, especially. And this, it's not really a question or anything. I just, I've been looking forward to being on these calls more and more because I'm trying to come to terms with whatever the lesson the universe has for me to learn in this. But over the past several months, I just feel like I'm watching my vegan friends and acquaintances dropping like flies and coming
really?
To confess to me that they're not vegan anymore. And both my husband and I, it's just like, it's just heartbreaking. And he said the sweetest and saddest thing to me the other day. And he said, I don't know why it upsets me so much more when someone, you know, more than when somebody doesn't go vegan, I'm more upset when they've been vegan and they're not vegan anymore. He said, I think it's because it's like watching a Jedi master turn to the dark side.
Right. Yeah.
And so I've just, gosh, I mean, some yoga teachers in the area have recently decided, oh, well, now because, you know, Ayurveda, you know, promotes eating dairy and ghee, they're eating dairy now. And just other people, I think, for convenience sake, started eating dairy again. And a couple of people who had been vegetarian for, like, over a decade started eating meat again. So I don't know if other people deal with this or what. I don't know. I just needed to express it to people who would feel my pain, I guess.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. And I don't know exactly what the I don't think there's one right answer to that. The question implicit is like, well, why are they doing this? But I think I would just like to say in response to that I was talking to Alex Hirschaft actually recently at this huge, I think it's the largest vegan Thanksgiving, I think I mentioned that anywhere, it was over 1,000 people, potluck we had at an animal sanctuary, and he was telling me that this is something that, you know, that he's realized too, that, you know, we tend as vegans to think that the most important thing we can do is to try to, you know, advocate and try to get people who are eating meat and dairy to move over and stop eating meat and stop eating dairy, and that's basically what we think. And when someone makes that leap and says, okay, now I'm a vegan, we tend to think, okay, good, so that's, I don't have to think about that anymore and work on, you know, spread the message to somebody else. We don't realize that. I think it's very important to remember that we live in a culture where there are very extremely powerful forces at work constantly to undermine what we're doing with compassion for animals and for human beings, and that anyone who becomes a vegan does so typically because their heart has been touched and they really want to eat a healthier life, and very often they want to stop contributing to violence towards animals, they want to stop contributing to the devastation of the oceans and the ecosystems and the rainforest, and they say, okay, that's it, I'm going vegan. And that may last their entire life, you know, very often. But oftentimes I think what happens is that people run into enormous resistance, especially from people that are close to them, you know, spouses, whoever it is in their family, people at work, people at the church, people at in different social organizations, and especially from doctors, and not only traditional MDs, some of the worst ones, I think much worse than MDs very often, are, you know, alternate, you know, naturopaths can be really, I mean, just incredibly anti-vegan, or, some chiropractors, or, you know, people who do Ayurveda, or people who do Chinese herbal medicine, you know, they say, oh, you got to eat fish to get enough yang energy, or they say, you got to eat this, you got to get that, or whatever. And in our culture, I think, and very much, unfortunately, we tend to be programmed to give our power away to health professionals and just think, well, I just don't know any better, I'll just do whatever they say, and sort of don't take responsibility for our choices when it comes to health, and think that, you know, we just have to do what they say. And so I think there's this whole array of very powerful forces, which is one of the reasons I think that the World Peace Diet training is important, in the sense that I think it's really helpful for us when we go vegan to do a lot more research and really understand at a deep level the health dimensions, the cultural dimensions, the environmental dimensions. You know, I think the deeper we understand all this, the more stable and strong we'll be able to be in the face of these winds that are blowing so strongly and sort of blow people back, you know, out the door. And you see them go flying back into the land of hell, you know. Oh my gosh, don't do it. But, you know, I think and that's why sometimes people, when we travel and we speak quite a bit, I mean, I speak to a lot of different groups, you know, colleges as well as vegetarian groups, and sometimes people say, oh, I would never do that, I don't want to preach to the choir. But I think it's very helpful to preach to the choir, because you're not preaching to the choir. We're, in a sense, inspiring the choir, or helping to reinforce and give the message that we all need to hear, whether we're vegans or not. It's still important, I think, to cultivate an understanding and to do the work that we need to do to keep it alive. And I think it's a good idea for people who are already vegans to make sure that they're continually staying abreast of things, maybe see a video now and then. I know a lot of people don't want to see videos, but it's really helpful, I think, from time to time to see an undercover video and just see, yeah, boy, you know, it's easy to forget that there's this horrific violence going on towards animals, and to create some kind of community where we can support each other, not only support, help people who are not vegan become vegans, but for us who are vegans and vegetarians to support each other and move toward deepening our understanding of that. And I think kind of what you're doing, what I understand you're doing anyway in Dayton, is I think helping both types of people. You know, you're helping encourage mm-hmm. people who are already there and giving them reinforcement, and then helping people who perhaps would like to know more to move in that direction too. And I think both are really important. So that's something that's lately I've really tuned in more since talking to Alex, that it's not just about focusing on the people who are not, you know, focusing on the pre-vegans. We got to also include in our compassion the vegans and help them to withstand the onslaught of the medical and pharmaceutical and social institutions that are really based, you know, financially and many other ways mm-hmm. On continued animal consumption. Because, you know, you go out the door and, you know, we probably don't see it. You know, I don't even notice the McDonald's. I mean, it's certainly not anything that would in any way be appealing. But I've talked to quite a few people, and they say even for a few years sometimes they still have a kind of a craving or a desire to have some cheese or something. And so it can be difficult if they're put in tempting situations a lot, and where they're being put down or mm-hmm. Being mocked or being, you know, whatever, is rejected, or, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen very subtly or sometimes more on a gross level, especially around the holidays. You know, people think, oh, gosh, I'm going to go back. I'm going to be with my relatives. I don't want to be, you know, we all sit down at the table, and what am I going to, you know, I just have to have some. I don't want to, you know, make them feel bad. You know, it's kind of like a feeling of, you know, being a compassionate person. I don't want to make them feel that I'm judging them, so I'll have a little bit of turkey, and pretty soon a little bit of ham and a little mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. things, and then we're very good at rationalizing, and it's easy. I mean, gosh, being a vegan in this culture takes enormous, I think, not just discipline, but just understanding, and so I think we have to be patient and understanding, not be mm-hmm. judgmental of people who begin eating animal foods again, and really listen to them, and like Howard said, I think be a rock solid example ourselves, and just see the best in them, and know that they, you know, they can come back for sure. You know, it can happen. Mm-hmm. It will happen, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like so many people, I feel like what happens for a lot of people is they just get tired of fighting, because it is a constant struggle. Mm-hmm. And my husband often talks about, like, how he never wants to go anywhere. Like, we have a little bubble. We live in our little vegan bubble. In our, like, our house right. is our vegan bubble, you know. And mm-hmm. I just kind of, I see that. And I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, I feel like I do everything I can. And it is really hard to, it's a struggle not to be judgmental about it when it's something that you feel so strongly about, and so strongly about it being just so fundamentally wrong.
Yeah, not to be judgmental of people who are still eating a standard American diet.
Who go back. Mm. And that's something that I really struggle with, is maintaining relationships with people and really feeling like I can be connected with them, because I feel so disconnected. And that's something, you know, my husband has brought up to me as I was going through reading the book and talking to him about things in the book, and he would say, about how it doesn't make him feel more connected and it doesn't make him feel more compassionate. And he says, it makes me not like people, and it makes me feel disconnected from everybody, because I feel so different, and I see everybody living this way that I just feel like is so wrong. And so he had asked me one day, he's like, what do you think Will Tuttle would say to that? So I guess that's my question now. What do you say to that?
I mean, what do I say to the fact that he feels as a vegan, he doesn't feel more connected, he feels less connected. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's the
question.
He
feels less connected, and he doesn't like people very much.
Right. Yeah, I think I went through that stage for quite a few years, I think.
I mean,
you know, you're kind of, it's this feeling of, borderline fury that, you know, don't people realize that when they take out their wallet and they buy a hamburger, they're just causing the most horrific violence and suffering towards animals and people and future generations and the earth and everything?
Mm-hmm.
How can they not care? And so, you know, there's this feeling of wanting to be disconnected from that kind of mindlessness and
mm-hmm.
being essentially, judging people because of that. But I think, you know, at a certain point, for me anyway, I realized that this is a program. You know, this is a program that's been injected into people. It's essentially robotic behavior. It's, I love the story in the Taoist tradition about this guy who's in a boat and he's lying down and he's just going down the stream. I think he's just on a lake or something. And there's a breeze blowing and he's laying down and he's just kind of snoozing in this boat. And all of a sudden, the boat gets slammed by another boat. He's just furious. He thinks, what? I mean, here I am minding my own business. Some guy just comes along and runs into me.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up and he looks over and he's ready to yell at this guy in the other boat. And it's an empty boat. It's just
mm-hmm.
blown by the wind into him. And I realize, you know, basically it's all empty boats. You know, people, there's nothing to get angry about with people. I mean, they are programmed in a certain way, and they're going to fulfill their programming. And the best thing we can do is to provide a context of love and a different example, you know, not rejecting them, because otherwise they're not, you know, there's no hope for them. I mean, they're just going to just stay where they are. You know, and the only thing that helped me become a vegan was seeing other vegans that were happy and healthy and having communities and being like, you know, that way. And but I think your husband probably does feel, he may not be aware of it consciously, but I bet you he does feel on some level more connected with his own inner spiritual dimension or his
mm-hmm.
own ethical dimension or his own connection with the earth. I think that is something that does get stronger when we start waking up. I mean, when we're asleep and we're eating animal foods, we're sort of, you know, we don't really know what we're doing, and it's more comfortable. But I don't think ultimately we're connected. I think we're more disconnected. And when we begin to awaken and we actually make a decision to stop eating animal foods, I mean, we have to be pretty awake to do that, relatively awake to just actually do that every day in the face of all this
mm-hmm.
resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, your husband is probably more connected to animals and to his own inner feelings and his own sense of being part of an ethical universe on some level than he was before. And that's really what I'm talking about in the World Peace Diet, is a sense of being connected to something greater. When we look out and we see this insane culture, we are less connected to it, but I think that's a positive thing. You know, it's like be of the world, be in the world, but not of the world. We don't want to be completely, we don't want to be like that. I mean, that's the whole point. That's like going back to sleep again. And that's the good thing to remember. I think someone who's gone vegan, you know, they may try to go back to sleep, but I think at least they've tasted, and there's a good chance they'll come back. And I think we
mm-hmm.
should really invite them back as best we can.
Yeah.
And so, wow, that was quite a long exchange, but it was great. I think it was an important point. A lot of those questions. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the question. We have, I think I have another hand up here, so I'm going to. Tara, are you with us?
Hi. Hi, Will. Hi, everybody.
Hey, good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear yours too, and good to hear Persephone and Nina and Pamela as well. And Howard Lyman, he was totally cool.
What a really guy.
I wanted to share a goal that I met, and a goal, G-O-A-L, and, that I'm real pleased with it. And I had while I was sitting here waiting to be called, I also had some realizations about it and why it was even important to me. When I first started thinking about being a vegan educator, and it's so much fun to be able to share with you guys because there's literally no one else to tell these things to, you know. I set some goals of communities that I wanted to reach out to, and one of them was the underserved, the homeless, and possibly the prison population as well. And, you know, I didn't really think about why it was, just that they were underserved, and I thought they might just do better, and there might be more abundance in their life and less cruelty and so on. But I started thinking today that really they are the receivers more so than the doers. They are the receivers of the seven mentalities in this world.
Yeah.
People that get herded into prisons and get herded into being the underserved and into the homeless shelters and so on. And so they actually have a personal experience, so they're, I think, more open to being able to hear this message and more open to doing something about it. And so I got my an opportunity to go into a homeless shelter and speak to them about vegan nutrition. And it was so much fun. They were very receptive. It was a really small group of six women. And many had children. One was actually about to deliver a baby as well. And of the six people, I thought this was interesting too, two of them had a lot of knowledge about vegetarianism and veganism and diet. And so they were very excited. So they were sort of the people that got reignited about the things that they already knew. And then the rest of the people, really a lot of the information was the first time they were hearing it. So I focused a lot on the health aspects and how you'll save money because you're healthier and how to actually buy vegan food and save a whole lot of money doing it and how you can buy organic foods and if you are a vegan. In other words, once you drop the meat aspect out and you can buy bulk and go to the farmer's market, then and I did some price comparisons for them. So they were able to easily see that $1.50 or $2 a pound versus $3 to $9 a pound was definitely going to save them some money and keep them healthier as well. So I focused pretty much in that area, but also provided them information about the animals and the inheritance of their states, their mind states. So just, you know,
good.
It was way fun.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good point about the fact that you can get a lot more food for less money. That's a lot healthier and actually will stay with them better. I mean, it'll just be so much better.
Even the farmer's market wasn't on the top of their list of things to do, you know.
Right.
So once they leave the shelters, they'll be interested in wanting to be able to continue to save money. And so that was pretty much the main topic. Also, I wanted to share with you something that I kind of intuitively got. I'm so pleased for that really interesting question that Nina asked Howard Lyman, because I would never have thought to ask him that. It was really, really was an interesting
question.
Really good question to know firsthand what his experience is. And I wanted to share that the Institute for Responsible Technology, IRT, with Jeffrey Smith, who wrote Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette, will train people to be on their speakers bureau. And even if you are not able to receive their training, they have free materials, actual presentations on the website. So if you'd like to go that direction in teaching people how to avoid them, and also to tell people that California is putting on the ballot an initiative to label GMOs in California. And the idea is to, once we get them labeled, the statistics say that somewhere between 54 and 94% of all people wouldn't buy them if they were labeled. So we want them labeled in California. So if you're not in California, it's okay. If you go to labelgmos.org, if you support this and it works here, then you can bring it to your state and then hopefully enough states, and then it dominoes upwards to nationally. So you're always welcome to donate to labelgmos.org. And intuitively, I have this idea. You've heard of cranberries being good for protecting the urinary tract, right? So
right,
I've also understood that cranberries protect the stomach lining and the intestinal tract from flu virus. And so I often recommend to people that they eat cranberries, especially kids. Feed them to your kids, raw, fresh, organic cranberries in their smoothie or breakfast in order to protect them from the flu virus, because the flu virus will not attach. It sort of acts like Teflon to your stomach lining. Well, if I think that the same principle might work, because BT corn, GMO corn, is being found to attach to the stomach lining of the people that eat it, thereby creating human pesticides. That's not horrific enough. So it occurs to me that the same principle might work. If you eat raw cranberries, perhaps you could further protect yourself from that BT corn attaching itself to the inside of your stomach. No idea
right.
if that's the truth, but it seems that it might be logical.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for that. Those great tips. Do you want to just mention, people might be curious, how did you actually go about getting your connection to the homeless shelter? Is that something pretty straightforward? People want to do what you did in their community. Was it pretty easy to speak to a homeless to people at a homeless shelter about veganism?
Well, I had the intention, and I didn't do anything about it yet, and I stumbled upon it sort of. I had gotten a donation for one of the events that I did, a huge amount of field roast sausages. And I had I got that donation from Whole Foods. And I'll tell you, the individual, you know, if you just ask, sometimes I'm finding that people will be willing to donate, because it's actually marketing, and marketing opportunity for them. So in exchange for three cases of Whole Foods donated field roast sausages, I put Whole Foods, you know, their sign on my table and their coupon books and all that sort of stuff in the neighborhood that I was in. And so I had all this sausage, and I had exhausted giving it away to all my friends and neighbors and everybody, so I started calling homeless shelters. And many of them couldn't actually provide that food. They didn't do cooking there.
Right.
So I called one, and they said, no, we can't. I did eventually find one that did cook meals on site, and I was able to give it away. But one of the shelters I called actually was a residency, where they actually brought them there, and then they rebuilt people. They rebuilt families. And they said, I can't take your donation, but will you come here and teach? I said, you bet. Of course I will. I would absolutely love to. And so we set a date for December, and I chose the topic, and they advertised it to their resident homeless people. And this particular group, they so well received it. I could not even continue with my agenda because they had so many questions and
right.
contributions, actually. Yeah.
Wow.
So I would just suggest calling them.
Just call, make calls.
Yeah.
And, right.
Yeah, just contact them and ask them if they have programs for the homeless. The larger homeless organizations, maybe for a city, maybe call your city. It's call the city itself if they're doing something for the homeless. Oftentimes, they just have places where they can get off the streets and sleep the night. They provide cots, and they provide
right.
meals and that sort of thing. They don't have any sort of organization around it, but others might, and churches, too.
Right.
Churches might be doing something for the homeless as well.
Right.
But that's how I happened upon that one. They asked me after I offered a donation.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Tara, for sharing that. And we only had about a few more minutes before we are going to need to close our call down here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you. All right, everyone. Well, this has been really, the time has flown by here. And I wanted to mention a few things just before we travel on with our lives. As we begin to bring this to a close, you'll notice there's a pretty big three-page December resources that should be available in your membership site. And those of you who are on the first Tuesday call, I went over some of the stuff. Some of it's new since then. But quite a few things I really recommend looking at here if you have a chance. There's some great information that's come out in the last week. A good, wonderful article by John McDougall about Steve Jobs, a longtime vegan who died of pancreatic cancer. And he does quite an illuminating job of illustrating that Steve Jobs was probably had got that cancer when he was only 21 or so, working for Hewlett-Packard, or in his early 20s, working with a lot of toxic chemicals, and that the fact that he was a vegan protected him, and he lived a lot longer than he probably would have if he'd been eating a standard American diet. And a really interesting, I thought this was so fascinating, being overweight is now penalized in Japan, and the standards are very strict. I couldn't believe it, 33.5 inches waist for men. If you have a greater waist than that, then you're considered overweight, which is really slim. I mean, I barely make that myself, and I am very thin. So this is quite interesting. They're really working on trying to cut down on the obesity that is starting to happen in Japan now that they're having dairy and meat over there more than they ever did before. Some great articles on Do Animals Know Right from Wrong? I wrote a recent article. It's on One Green Planet, kind of based on this idea that it seems that animals, as well as humans, really do have, especially mammals, really do have a sense of right and wrong, and in the sense of taking something from someone, stealing or harming them for one's own benefit is something that they do not do. It's not right to do, and they will go out of their way not to do it, or will even suffer themselves to avoid harming others. So it's not just this idea that only humans are ethical. We can see that this is something that really seems to be rooted in all mammals, or many mammals that have been studied so far in this way. And I think these are things that we probably know intuitively. There's been some great articles, some major, like The Solution to World Hunger is to Eat Less Meat. This came out from a recent study that was done. I won't go through everything here, but there's a lot of interesting articles. This one it really caught my eye. The number of vegans has doubled since 2009, according to a Harris poll. This is really good news. I mean, this is so even though people are going back, Persephone, they're coming over even faster than they're going back. We're up to apparently 7.5 million vegetarians and vegans, and about 2.5%. Let's see, is that right? 2.5% of the population. Yeah, 7.5 million are vegans, which is about 2.5% of the population. So the numbers seem to be really growing, and this is very good news. And the number, like Howard said, the number of people who are eating who say they're eating vegetarian is way up to like between 35 and 40%. So we are seeing enormous changes happening, and I think it's really important to realize that the momentum is building in this direction. I also want to say that a lot of people are going, or some people who go back toward, who leave veganism, are in a sense influenced by some very persuasive campaigns that are being launched by the Weston A. Price Foundation, which is in many ways a front group for the meat, dairy, and egg industry that attack soy and attack a lot of the basic vegan premises. And they're putting a lot of money into this. And so I guess just to be aware that they're getting more sophisticated in the whole, use of humane meat. A lot of former vegetarians are now being told that humane meat is is humane, which is, you know, we have to, I think it's up to us to counter these arguments. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, to mention that. And great things happen. Like, for example, in Toronto, millions of people are seeing these pro-vegan metro ads on their subways, you know, that are being that are put up by local vegan groups, vegetarian groups and vegan groups. So fantastic stuff coming out here. I really don't have time to go through all this, but it's if you have a chance, please do. There's also some videos, the Green Beautiful I mentioned, I think, last time. Very interesting. So this 108-year-old vegan woman in Oregon, very interesting to see that too. And this last article, Veganism, A Truth Whose Time Has Come, by Angel Flynn. She's a friend of mine. Very excellent article. There's a lot of great stuff in this December resources. So if you have a chance to spend a little time, please do. I really love doing this, just going through and putting things together that I find that I think are helpful resources for us to stay abreast of what's happening and to share with other people. It's a huge amount. I also want to encourage everyone to continue to participate in the online forums. The discussions are extremely beneficial and helpful, and we always have a chance to air our grievances or share our successes and questions and so forth there. We have our next call will be coming up in 2012. The first Tuesday will be January 3rd. And then the third Thursday will be January 19th. So I'm looking forward to talking with all of you then and responding if you have questions or comments or concerns at that point. Again, enjoying the holidays as best we can. And really take time for yourself. I think it's so important to make sure that you take time to my wonderful spouse, Madeline, is a wonderful, you know, really inspiring example of just making sure every day to take time to read in things that are uplifting or illuminating spiritually or in some other way helpful. We, of course, always meditate for an hour every morning. And I think it's really important to have an inner practice and spend time in nature and to, as Howard said, to be happy, to cultivate a sense of joy and thanksgiving. You know, and it's, I think for me, it's really a great way to do that is to just go out into the woods or onto a lake or a stream or in some way and see the beauty around and remember the preciousness of this life that we have and that we have each other, that we are part of a movement on this earth of compassion for all life, and that this movement is getting stronger and there's more and more people that are awakening to the truth that love is the only power and that everything else is going to fade away as our love gets stronger. We don't have to fight against others. We can bring our love to the situation and our awareness and our mindfulness, and that this nonviolence is ultimately the greatest power. As Gandhi said, and I think all the great spiritual teachers of the planet have emphasized that as well. So we are in a time, I think, of impending crisis. Today, I guess, or yesterday, Obama signed this terrible, the Senate passed it. I have it here somewhere, but it, I can't remember the title of it. But basically, it cancels the Bill of Rights. So I really think this is, as I said in the World Peace Diet, this is something that's going to be unavoidable if we don't change our violence towards animals and stop imprisoning them. We're going to find the same thing happening to us. It's called the Indefinite Military Detention Measure, passed overwhelmingly by the Senate, signed by Obama apparently. So it allows people to be indefinitely detained if they're considered terrorists, and that can be anyone apparently, even U.S. citizens, without a trial or anything. So that's basically the end of the Bill of Rights, and we, I think, should really take this seriously and realize that as people who are living our lives for compassion and peace, that it's now more important than ever to help spread the vegan message of compassion and kindness and inclusion, and that this is really the foundation of creating a new world. So thank you all so much for the efforts you're making, and I apologize for kind of bringing that news in at the very end here. It seems like it's kind of a bummer to end with, but I think in the bigger picture, I think it's good to remember that there's a very powerful force for healing and love, and that's why these small forces of are trying to pass these laws in order to stop. So it's like they're trying to stop this gigantic wave, but the wave is unstoppable, I think. And the wave of that is coming and building is a wave that is in all our best interests. And I think the most important thing is to keep on the tracks that we're on of understanding and deepening our compassion for all life and for each other, and working together to help spread the message. So there's a lot more I could say here, but I just finished an article. Actually, it's going to be put up on One Green Planet on Monday or Tuesday. I just got an email about that. And so it's called The Beautiful Earth. And I wasn't able to put it on the December resources because I didn't have the URL, but it will be up in a couple of days next week. So I have my ideas in that article too. All right, well, we have more news that the World Peace Diet is live and well in Healdsburg, California as well with Mark Stroud and everybody that's working there, and lots of good things coming. So we'll keep you posted on everything, and have a great holiday season, wonderful new year, and we'll look forward to getting together with everyone in the new year. So much love to all of you. Keep up the great work you're doing, and we look forward to staying in touch. Thanks so much, Steve, and thanks to everyone who was on the call with us today and who will be listening to this later as well. Much love to you all. Good night.